So the bell rings, right? And the crowds go crazy. And Rocky Balboa and Apollo Creed like stumble out onto the mat. It's round 15. Oh yes, we're going there today. We are going there. And at first, as you know the story, Rocky Balboa has got him in the corner, right? It looks like this is going to be done. But then Apollo Creed comes fighting back, and it's like back and forth. And the suspense is like killing me, right, in this movie. And then all of a sudden, Rocky gives this incredible left jab. And both of them like stumble through the air. And you cue the music from the symphony music of like, dun, 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 dun. And they're falling to the mat, both of them, right? And the referee says, one, two. And it's like eternal slow motion in this movie. And three. And they're both just there like, oh, they just look like they've like been in a war together. And you see Apollo Creed like reach for the ropes. Four, five, six. And then Rocky is just out, and everyone in the stands is like, come on, come on. And it doesn't matter how many times you've seen this movie, because you're still like, Italian Stallion, get up, you know, get up. Seven, eight, it looks like Apollo Creed is going to get up. And then all of a sudden, nine, he falls, and Rocky gets up and kind of does this like stumbling thing. And he's the world heavyweight champion, right? And there's this incredible celebration. And then the post-game interview goes like this, right? Except for my kid being born, this is the greatest night in the history of my life. And I just want to say one thing to my wife who's home. Repeat after me. Yo, Adrian, I did it. Right. And they're going to Disneyland together, and it's a happy ending and everything. And so we remember that movie, and that's the scene that starts Rocky III, right? And then you have this sort of collage of scenes of the next 5 years of Rocky's life. And, you know, he gets the cars, he gets the houses, he gets the fame, and something starts to shift. He has 10 heavyweight boxing matches, and he wins them all. He's the heavyweight champion of the world. And then something happens. At the Philadelphia Museum of Art, they put a statue of Rocky Balboa, if you remember. And then at the sort of like, they unveil it, and Rocky is like, yeah, yeah, he's the most famous boxer in the world. And then all of a sudden, you see this guy, Clubber Lang, a.k.a. Mr. T, steps up, right? And he says, why won't you fight me? I want a chance to contend for the championship. And in case you are wondering right now, this has everything to do with desire. This is Rocky Balboa, right? And so then Clubber Lang says, you know, fight me, fight me. And Rocky agrees to it. And Rocky just gets killed, right? And Mickey, his long-term trainer, tragically dies. And so then Rocky is just crushed, and Apollo Creed steps back into the storyline, and you're like, this just doesn't get any better. And Apollo Creed says, let me train you, Rocky. You can do this. You'll have a rematch, and we all know where this storyline is going, right? But there's this moment where Rocky is unsure of himself. He has all these fears. He doesn't know what he really wants deep down. Best scene. Maybe one of the best scenes in American movie making is Adrian, his wife, on the beach, giving it to Rocky. Are you ready to see this morning? Here we go.
Why don't you tell me the truth?
What are you putting me through, Adrian? You want to know the truth? The truth is I don't want to lose what I got. In the beginning, I didn't care about what happened to me. I go in the ring, I get busted up. I didn't care. But now there's you, there's the kid. I don't want to lose what I got.
What do we have that can't be replaced? What? A house. We got cars, we got money, we got everything but the truth. What's the truth, damn it?
I'm afraid, all right? You want to hear me say it? You want to break me down? All right, I'm afraid. For the first time in my life, I'm afraid.
I'm afraid, too. There's nothing wrong with being afraid.
There is, for me, there is.
Why, you're human, aren't you?
Look, I don't know what I am. All I know is I'm a liar, and because of that, Mickey ain't here no more.
You didn't push him into anything. He was a grown man, and he did what he had to do. And you have no right to feel guilty for what happened. You don't. You were a champion, and you did what you were expected to do. And you did what I and everybody else thought you should do. And you want to tell me that those lights weren't real, that you were carried? Well, I don't believe it. It doesn't matter what I believe, because you're the one that's got to carry that fear around inside you. Afraid that everybody's going to take things away. Afraid you're going to be remembered as a coward, that you're not a man anymore. Well, none of it's true. And it doesn't matter if I tell you. It doesn't matter because you're the one that's got to settle it. Get rid of it. Because when all the smoke is cleared and everyone's through chanting your name, it's just going to be us. And you can't live like this. We can't live like this. life. Look what it's doing to you now. Paolo thinks you can do it. So do I. But you gotta want to do it for the right reasons. Not for the guilt over Mickey. Not for the people. Not for the title. Not for money or me. But for you. Just you. Just you alone.
If I lose.
And you lose. At least you lose with no excuses. No fear. And I know you can live with that.
But you get so tough.
I live with a fighter.
'80s filmmaking at its best, right there. Awesome. And the more you watch it, the more you go from like, oh, to like, oh, that's just funny. And so in this scene, I love the strength of Adrian, right? And essentially she's asking him, she's calling him out of his desire. What do you want? What is the deepest desire of your heart, Rocky? And it's cheesy and it's fun, but you know, cheesy fun is good. And so, This psalm that we read today, this beautiful psalm, it says, delight yourself in the Lord, and God will give you the desires of your heart. And so we're going to unpack this today. And I want to tell you today that your deepest desires are found in God's story. And so we're going to continue to break that down, but we need to kind of talk about what a desire is. And so a desire is this sense of deep longing, this sense of wishing for something to be so, this sense of hope, this sense of deep passion. And a desire is quite simply the driving force of your life. So desires are like an engine. It's what drives all of our hearts to reach the goals that we set for ourselves, right? That deep thing within us that drives us so much. And I wanna tell you that desires are good and wholesome and amazing things. God created us with desires, with passions to do certain things and to build certain things and to make beautiful music or make really good food. God has given us this incredible journey of life to have these passions and desires that overflow. And so it's interesting though, because we have like on one side, we have this sense that sometimes our desires can be distorted, right? Sometimes think American Idol with that person that just never had singing abilities at all, right? Distorted desires. Have y'all seen that, right? Like on The Voice where it's like, you're horrible. And it's like really sad that your mom never told you. But those are the distorted desires. And then on the other side, there's those like flourishing desires, right? And those are those deep within us, those passions that we really want. And I find that most of us are kind of in the middle. We're kind of right in the middle of, you know, not many of us are on that far extreme. And we're still not quite there at the deepest flourishing things. And there's this God that continually invites us to the deepest desires. This God is pulling us with everything into a life of flourishing desires. And in this middle place, you know, we have to buy cars and buy houses, but God is continuing to call us to something more, to call us to see everything that we have for flourishing, for other people to flourish, to use our stuff for incredible ways. Example, I have a friend who his wife has just done really great with her career, and so he has become daddy mom, right? And that's awesome. We love daddy moms. And the thing that happened, though, is he has three girls. So, and he had to buy a minivan, which, you know, his whole life has been like this downward spiral into daddy mom. And so he has a minivan with his three girls, and then he became soccer coach. And so his van has, and this has been like from the time they were young to now they're going off to college, he is daddy soccer mom. And he takes all three girls. He's been all three girls' coach at one time. And so I joke that he bought this minivan, but this minivan has this incredible deep desire of him to connect with his girls and to be a dad and be meaningful. It wasn't just a car for his own distorted desires. It was a car that had deep, a sense of meaning. The girls even talk about the car now as like the soccer van. And great stuff, right? Well, so there's those distorted desires. And I'm not sure if you've seen the Cadillac 2014 ELR commercial. This is what I put in the category of distorted desires, okay? Now, first of all, you've got the cool, slick Hollywood star who walks out, and everything is perfect, right? The house is beautiful. And let me just remind you, if you have young kids and your house is perfect, they're lying to you, right? There are toys scattered everywhere that someone has shoved into a closet. So he comes out, and the first thing he says in this commercial is he talks about vacation time, and he names other nations, you know. Oh, you get a month of time of vacation, and then he's slick. Even with his kids, he gives them like this, like, kind of creepy high five, right? And then it's the whole time he's moving to tell you how rad his Cadillac is. And the whole time you're thinking, oh, this is just so wrong. And then finally he gets to his Cadillac and he says these words, right? For all the stuff, that's the upside of only taking 2 weeks off in August. As if every one of us should work 24/7, ignore our families, ignore our kids, and just live for the Cadillac dream. Now, let's be really honest, that Cadillac is really cool. It feels so good to feel those grooves of that Cadillac, but this is that distorted desire, right? This truly, this man truly wants something much more deeper, I hope so, than just his Cadillac. And it's amazing what happened. The Twittersphere and on the Facebook and on the YouTube, it blew up with 20 to 40 year olds who were like, that commercial is disgusting. That is like terrible, especially with the new economic realities that we're all facing. It was so encouraging to me to see the sort of this younger generation saying, that is not what we want in a commercial. And so then on the other hand, I don't know if you've seen the iPhone commercial. First of all, let's be honest, in the world of consumerism, superior product, right? But that's beside the point. So during Christmas, just this Christmas, the iPhone company puts out this commercial, right? And the teenager has the new iPhone, and you're not quite sure what's going on with the commercial. They show up at grandma and grandpa's house, and they get hugs, and you see them building snowmen together, and you see, like, huddled on the floors, like, all the grandkids. It's uncomfortable how tight and how filled up the house is. And then at the end, the teenager's on the iPhone ever, stereotype, right, rolling. And at the very end, the teenager shares with them, he's created a video with his iPhone that shares all the beautiful family moments. And it's like tears well up in you because this is the flourishing desires. This is the desire for family and for love and to be together in community. And all that stuff just sort of fades in existence. So you have distorted desires, Cadillac, and then the iPhone commercial of the teenager who makes this movie. And you have our life right here in the middle, trying to sort this all out in our day-to-day decisions, right? And then you have this God who tells us in Psalm 37:4, delight yourself in the Lord, and God will give you the desires of your heart. And I want to just remind us that those deep desires, what this God of love does is pull us into a better story, is pull us into these flourishing desires where stuff goes on, where we make an impact in our kids' life and in our neighborhood and our community beyond anything we could hope or imagine, beyond anything a Cadillac could offer us. And so we've talked about God's story. We've talked about this incredible God of love who from the very beginning set within every human heart deep desires that are placed within our heart. And at the very end of the story, at the end of the book in Revelation, the desires are fulfilled, right? There's a new city that comes down and there's no more tears and there's no more fears. And so from the beginning of God's story to the end, this is a God who gives us desires and then promises that these deep felt things will one day be fulfilled. This is a God who wants to create beloved community in our midst. And so St. Augustine said this about this God who calls us to deep desires. You called, shouted, broke through my defenses. You flared, blazed, banished my blindness. You lavished your fragrance. I gasped, and now I pant for you. I tasted you, and I hunger and thirst. You touched me, and I burned for your peace. Beautiful poetry of this God who is pulling us into these flourishing desires. In 1955, Rosa Parks had had enough. In the what's going on in America is this a racial caste system. African Americans cannot drink at the same water fountains, eat at the same restaurants, or even go to the bathroom in the same place as our the white folk. And so Rosa Parks is coming home from three shifts, and she sews for a living, and she's sitting in the section of the bus that African Americans were allowed to sit in. And the bus driver stops the bus because there was a few more white people that needed seats and asks her to get up and to leave. And finally, she had had enough. And she said, no, I will not get up out of my seat. And so they arrest her. But what they didn't know is that Rosa Parks had a reputation in the community of being an upstanding woman, a woman of integrity, a woman who loved the children and had the respect of all the men. And so when she said no, it literally turned the switch. It turned the deep desires of the community onto this racial problem. And they got together, and led by Martin Luther King Jr. at Dexter Avenue Baptist Church, and they decided the best thing they could do, that the deepest desires were being called out of them. And so they decided, we're going to boycott the buses system. And this could mean sort of economic catastrophe for the city. If they didn't get the funds for the busing, it would literally shut down a part of the city. But here's the beautiful part. Everyone contributed in some way. If you had extra money, you gave money for gas, you gave money for new tires. If you had a car, you committed to carpool. If you had a taxi cab, you gave rides. If you could walk, you walked. So as a community, they came together in the church. They became the beloved community, and they said, we're gonna walk, we're gonna through the snow and through the hail and through the rain, we're gonna drive one another, we're gonna do whatever it takes in this place to see the bus system shut down. And so after a year of walking and of building this community together, finally, the Supreme Court ruled that bus segregation was illegal. It was a minor victory, but it set across all America the civil rights era. It set into motion transformation. And this is the church at its very best. This is when we live into the deepest desires of God's storyline. Every person coming alive for what their life could mean in transforming the community. This small church in this little town transforms the heart of America, or at least sets it into motion. And so King said this as he was reflecting on it 3 years longer, and agape is the word for love in Greek. And he says, agape is not a weak, passive love. It is love in action. Agape is love seeking to preserve and create community. It is insistence on community. And when one seeks to break it, agape is a willingness to go any length to restore community. It doesn't stop at the first mile, but goes the second mile to restore community. It is a willingness to forgive, not 7 times, but 70 times 7 to restore community. The cross is the eternal expression of the length to which God will go in order to restore broken community. The resurrection is a symbol of God's triumph over all the forces that seek to block community. The Holy Spirit is the continuing community, creating reality that moves through history. He who works against community is working against the whole of creation. Therefore, if I respond to hate with the reciprocal hate, I do nothing but intensify the cleavage and broken community. I can only close the gap in broken community by meeting hate with love. And so you sense in these deep words this sense of King had tapped into this great storyline of God. This storyline that these group of people could transform the world. And these people had bought into that their deepest desires weren't met, even how great it is, a Rocky Balboa story or a Cadillac story, but they were fulfilled in the depth of being community together. And so we move slowly and remind ourselves of Psalm 37:4, delight yourself in the Lord, and God will give you the desires of your heart. Your deepest desires are found in God's storyline. And Donald Miller really helps us out because we go from this huge, epic storyline in the Bible to this amazing example in history and then to our life, right? And it's a lot harder to tangibly, yeah, that's really great. There's not a lot of buses in Highlands Ranch, Dale, you know? And Donald Miller says that each of us in our life has been given these roles. You know, some of us are mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters and leaders. Maybe you're a business owner. Maybe you're a mentor, an artist, an athlete. And Donald Miller challenges you to pick five of those and to write those down. And then Donald Miller says that these deep desires that you have that are from God given, to write them next to it, right next to what it means for you to be a teacher. And write why. Dig deep. Go push beyond the surface of why you signed up to be a teacher. Why you really wanted to be a business owner. What was the heart of that calling for you? Write that ambition or that desire out. And it's amazing what happens, because your life becomes that engine. That engine gets clarified and you find this incredible momentum for your life. If your passion is to be a great dad to your kids, it clarifies it when you write that. I'm going to be the best dad I possibly can be in this line. And that's the way you bring about the transformation and change. God is inviting you to this flourishing storyline. And so I just shared with you kind of briefly. So my first one was, I'm a child of God. And that really means a lot to me, that I am a child of God, and everyone I know is someone who is deeply and dearly loved by God. There's no longer any room for guilt. We are all people who are deeply and dearly loved. And my second one is a husband. And I simply put that I actually really want a great marriage. When I get time away, when I get to write it out, I want to have a great marriage with my wife. I want to have that sense of connectedness and deep meaning. And then my third one was father. And the thing for me that I struggle with is I want to be a dad who's fully present to my kids. And I struggle with, my mind starts to get contained of all the things I have to do. Can you relate with me, dads? All those to-dos and all the things that pull me away. Instead of focusing in and actually building that Lego project is, building a fort with my son and being happy to do that, right? Throwing the baseball and just being in the moment with my son and my daughter. And then lastly, I put the last two I had is pastor. And I want to create words that inspire your hearts. And I want to see this community bloom and do beautiful things in our community. And then lastly, student. I'm doing some stuff with school. But what I want to ask you today is that for your deepest desires to be found, to find their sense of home, and to find a sense of engine for your life, you have to kind of sync these desires with God's story. And there is such a synergy when you do this. It feels deeply rooted and deeply connected, and you're sort of drawn deeper than you ever thought. When you live on the Cadillac side of things, life sucks. Let's be really honest. If all you are living for is sort of those distorted desires, but when you allow yourself to be pulled into such an extent, life starts to come alive. Every human interaction and every moment becomes deep and rich and filled with meaning and purpose. So the question I have for you is, will you sync your desires with God's story? And so before you, you have the storyline, and some of you have field notes. And if you don't have field notes, we'd love to give you a little field note for this sermon series. And I want to challenge you that the way you can sync your desires with God is to do that simple exercise. It sounds really simple. Write out those your roles: father, husband, business owner, mentor, and then put next to them, what's your deepest desire? What is God speaking deeply to your heart about? And then begin to let that saturate in you, and you will feel the engine momentum of your life pull you into these.